Yeah, so I really want to thank you for coming and joining Dr. Perez. It's really appreciated. Would you like to just introduce some of the stuff, like your experience or what you do?
Yes, so yes, I'm Dr. Alejandra Perez. I work at University of Miami at the Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center. I am a breast oncologist, and I've been doing breast cancer work for about 20 years, and we take care of patients with early stage breast cancer, late stage breast cancer, but we also take care of women that are at risk, women and men also, that are at risk of breast cancer for whatever reason. They don't have breast cancer, but they could be at risk, so we also take care of them. We do research trying to advance the field.
Yeah, I speaking of risk, I actually have been looking into a lot of risk factors. And I found that alcohol, I know, is a very commonly associated risk factor, but why exactly does it result in the increased likelihood of being diagnosed with breast cancer?
Yes, so several reasons. Alcohol, yeah, increases the risk of breast cancer, no question. There are many cases of breast cancer that cannot be attributed to just alcohol intake alone. We have to be very careful with that. And we always say to patients that in terms of breast cancer, they should be not doing more than 3 glasses a week, 3 to 5 maximum, but we like to keep it around 3 a week. Alcohol increases the levels of estrogen, and breast cancer is a very hormonal disease, and estrogen plays a big role, so increases the levels of estrogen. And also alcohol can damage the DNA of the cell, so it causes problems with the cell at the DNA level. So that's the reason alcohol increases the risk of cancer.
I know. Yeah, I just wanted because I know it's often associated with alcohol is associated with many diseases, so I think it's very important to really understand why, so that people can really take in and take the proper measures. And I know you said it was a very hormonal disease, like so I know the development of like hormone therapies. So what exactly are those?
Yeah, so breast cancer in many cases, most cases actually, is a disease that is stimulated by, especially in women, the female hormones, estrogen, progesterone. So those two play a very important role in breast cancer. And when you do a biopsy, you always check for those receptors, estrogen receptor, progesterone receptor, to see if the cancer was stimulated by estrogen and progesterone. And to see how to treat, because if we know that that's a hormonal cancer, we can block the estrogen and the progesterone, and that's what we do with what we call hormonal therapy, which is actually the opposite, is anti-estrogen therapy. Because hormonal therapy to a lot of people is hormone replacement therapy. Women take estrogen, progesterone after menopause just to, for whatever reason, to minimize menopausal changes or many different reasons. But what we do is the opposite. We call it hormonal therapy, but it's anti-estrogen therapy to decrease the risk of cancer coming back or to control metastatic breast cancer.
Oh, so it's more like, yeah, so it's like hormonal regulation, really.
Right.
Oh, wow. So that's really cool how you, there's specific therapies to really target breast cancer in specific, such, and the nature of it as a disease. I know definitely much more household common ideas like chemotherapy. And like, how do those compare? Like, can you use both of them? Are both used together? Like, how do they go together?
When we treat patients with breast cancer, some patients get hormonal therapy, some patients get chemotherapy, some patients get both. We usually don't do them together. We can do it sequentially. Sometimes if it's early stage breast cancer and the patient needs chemotherapy, we give chemotherapy first, and then the patient stays on hormonal therapy because that's a longer treatment. Hormonal therapy we give anywhere from 5 to 10 years in early stage breast cancer. But chemotherapy, of course, will last 3, 6 months depending on the regimen. So we usually do chemotherapy first. In patients with advanced breast cancer, sometimes we use chemo, sometimes we use hormonal therapy. It depends on the case. They're very different because they act in a very different way. Hormonal therapy, like we discussed, blocks estrogen, progesterone. Chemotherapy affects the cell at the DNA level, and there are many different mechanisms of action depending on the drug you use, but they work differently. The chemotherapy works faster, hormonal therapy takes longer, so they're very different ways to treat the patient depending on the case and depending on the aggressiveness of the tumor and the characteristics of the tumor.
Oh, oh wow. So with hormonal therapy, though, does it have as much, I guess, effect on the patient? I know with chemotherapy, I've had family members who had cancer, and when it came to chemotherapy, it really alters their way of life, and their behaviors and, you know, how they live their life. So does hormonal therapy, is it more like tempered down, or does it really still have the same effects?
Chemotherapy is hard. Chemotherapy has a lot of side effects, and in fact, a lot of the research that we're doing now is trying to move away from chemotherapy. I truly believe that we're going to be remembered as those horrible doctors that used to give chemotherapy. I hope that we move away from chemotherapy soon, and most of the research is actually looking at targeted therapies. And hormonal therapy was one of the first forms of targeted therapy. You have a target, which is the estrogen receptor, and you target that. So with chemotherapy, we have more side effects, no question. You have hair loss, you have nausea, diarrhea, vomiting, fatigue, weakness. So there are a lot of side effects, and we try to work on those, and we've made a lot of improvements with trying to manage quality of life, because obviously that's extremely important. We have great drugs. We even have now devices that can prevent hair loss in women. Uh-huh. So we've made a lot of progress, but still, chemo is chemo, and it's tough. Hormonal therapy, we also see side effects, but it's not the same. With hormonal therapy, you have more maybe joint aches, maybe menopausal symptoms, but it's not it doesn't compare to chemotherapy.
Oh wow! So that's, I mean, amazing to hear the improvement in science. It's so rapid, medicine. It's always so cool to just look and read new research and Google Scholar and just find new things about it. And I know a huge part of your job, and any oncologist, anyone who's working with cancer patients, is the patient interactions, especially when you have to tell them they got breast cancer or that they have been diagnosed with it. Yeah, how do you go about doing that? And like, what advice do you give to patients when they just get diagnosed with it?
Well, it's probably the most rewarding part of what we do, that interaction with the patient. And that's one of the reasons I chose this field. So it depends on the case. I think the important thing for patients is to know that there's always something that we can do. Because patients hear the word cancer, and of course, that's a scary word. But there's always hope. There's always something that we can do. It doesn't matter if it's early stage or advanced breast cancer. We can help them. Most patients do extremely well. Early detection is key, of course. If they come to us early, they have a much better chance. But there's treatment available, and always our advice is, know your risk, know that we're there for them, and don't be afraid, because there's always something we can do.
Oh, wow. That's, I mean, probably very, I know it's so difficult. I mean, imagine hear the words that you have cancer. So, I mean, the support system, I know, is so important. Probably in the fight, too. I know it just, the positive atmosphere definitely would help a patient. In terms of early detection, I do work at the American Cancer Society, and what I found in my research, and I write blogs for them about cancer screenings. I know over 45% of cancer deaths are preventable, which I found really interesting. And I wondered, like, well, why don't we have more accessible screenings? Why isn't everyone getting screened? Why is our screenings not everywhere?
Yeah, access to care is a problem. So I'm in Florida, and here about 60-70% of women get mammograms. So we still have a lot of women that are not getting mammograms. And it could be just access to care, barriers there of access to care, lack of insurance, or maybe they just don't see it as a priority. And one of our jobs is really to educate the public. And that's why our involvement with the community is extremely important, to make sure women understand the importance of having that yearly mammogram, going to the doctor, discussing the risk. I always say to them, you need to know your risk. You need to know your family history. You need to know what to do, and take matters into their own hands, because we need to be in control. So there are many institutions out there that are helping women get that information, like the American Cancer Society and many others. And there are also some institutions that will pay for your mammogram if the patient doesn't have insurance. So access to care, it really shouldn't be a barrier anymore, because you just have to look for a place to get your mammogram, and maybe not for free, but at a very low cost.
And with mammograms, is there anything to fear? Like, I know radiation is often, like, with x-rays and any type of scan. Is there any reason to fear with the mammogram?
Not really, because the benefit is much more. Yes, of course, there is radiation with mammograms, but we know the exact amount of radiation that patient is going to be getting for life, because if you get a mammogram once a year starting at age 40, for example, you're going to get a good, 40 years of mammograms. So yeah, there is radiation, but the benefit is huge, and it's the best way we have to detect cancer. So they should not be concerned about that. Some patients say that it's uncomfortable, and sure, maybe it's uncomfortable, but we always say to them that cancer is much more uncomfortable.
Oh, wow. I was actually reading something about mammograms the other day. It was about tomosynthesis. And the movement towards like a 3D mammogram that's more specific and more accurate. Are they anywhere yet? Like, is that something that's starting to be implemented?
Yes, of course. At University of Miami, we only do 3D mammogram tomosynthesis. So all our equipment is 3D. And I think most institutions now have 3D. It's a much better technique. We are able to diagnose more cancers. We're also able to decrease what we call the callback rate. The women that go to have a mammogram and they're called back, come back, there's an abnormality here, you need more studies, you need an ultrasound, you need more images. So that callback rate is decreased significantly with tomosynthesis, and we detect more cancers. It's a much better technique.
Oh, wow.
So women, if they can, they should be asking for that.
And just shifting gears a bit, I know the reason that I was so interested in talking to you is partly because that you're a medical advisor of the National Breast Cancer Foundation, which I mean is a leading organization in the help of fighting breast cancer and helping getting the word out there to the people. I want you to know about, like, what's the importance of advocacy, especially in the fight of any cancer, but specifically breast cancer. Like, how important is it? Where should it be focused at right now?
I think it's extremely important. And that's why I get involved with organizations like them, because it's all about awareness, education. Women need to be empowered to know their risks, to know what resources are available in the community. And I also believe that breast cancer, we do very well in terms of survival. And I believe that that's thanks to advocacy and institutions like them, because women really took matters into their own hands. And with breast cancer, you hear a lot about breast cancer. It's not the same with some other tumors. And that's thanks to advocacy. They were able to really move the masses and to achieve a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I love to be involved with the community. I do it all the time. I'm always out there with the community trying to educate and trying to just raise awareness, because if we get one woman to go do a mammogram, that's all we need.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I 100% agree. And that's probably the reason I joined the American Cancer Society, and I work and do as much as I can for them, is just seeing, really trying to help people, especially education is something that I've the most been interested in, and really educating people about what to look out for, how they can get involved, how, what they should do if they see any signs, or what they should be looking out for, what should they do if they have any concerns. So I definitely understand that. I really do value the discussion with the with the people, the people that might not be the most knowledgeable in science and medicine. With that said, I was curious, like, where do you think that advocacy as a whole is most lacking? Like, where do we need to get more involved?
So one of the reasons I got involved with them in particular, I work also with the American Cancer Society. We're always making strides against breast cancer. I think they do a beautiful job at addressing disparities, and that's one of the reasons I'm Hispanic. So, of course, to me, that's something that I value a lot, and I think we need to do more there to address disparities. Why African American women or Hispanic women in the U.S. do worse than white women? So I think there's more room there for improvement, trying to improve access, trying to improve increase awareness in communities that may need a little bit more. So I think that's one of the areas. And like you said before, patients with metastatic breast cancer, they always felt that they were left behind, that people were more interested in early stage breast cancer. And now there's a big push to really address the concerns of the metastatic breast cancer community. Because the good thing about breast cancer is that we're curing a lot of women, but even the women that have advanced breast cancer, they're living long. And you can have patients with metastatic breast cancer live 10, 15 years, 20 years. So we really need to address their needs. And that's the importance of survivorship programs, trying to address the needs of those long-term survivors.
And I actually really found it interesting, your point about inequities based on really like socioeconomic positions. And that just reminds me of a time I know at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, I found it so weird because I was reading the news and they were discussing how African-Americans and low-income neighborhoods were specifically at a higher risk of developing COVID and being hospitalized for it. And I always found it weird because I was like, that in itself cannot be the cause, and it's definitely, because money is not going to cause, directly at least, such a thing. And I found it so interesting then to connect the dots and realize, wait a minute, they don't have the same access to healthcare that probably many people take for granted. And I definitely think that's super important and something that is once again evident in COVID too. And speaking of advocacy as a whole, and just breast cancer in general, in a more holistic point of view, just to really finish my last question, what does the future look like for at least breast cancer, maybe advocacy, or just more and so of medicine and treatments?
So the future, I think, is all about personalized medicine, targeted therapies. So I told you, I've been doing this for 20 years, and I've seen the change. 15 years ago, we were treating everybody the same. Everybody would get the same type of chemo, the same type of hormonal therapy, the same type. So everybody was the same because we had these huge clinical trials looking at thousands of women. Now it's very different. Now we know more about the genetics. Now we know more about the genetic material of the tumor. What are the actionable mutations that those tumors have? What can we do to target that specific mutation? And you can see 10 patients with breast cancer, and they all have a very different genetic makeup. So it's all about personalized medicine, precision medicine. You just treat every single patient in a different way with new therapies, trying to move away from chemotherapy. Trying to be more specific about that particular abnormality in the cancer that we can target with more advanced therapies. So I think that's really the future, and that's how and it's now. I mean, we're seeing it now, but I think that's going to improve significantly. And I think in terms of advocacy and just outreach to the community, it's all about addressing those inequalities, addressing disparities. Just trying to make sure that the field is the same for everybody, and that every single patient has the same access and the same resources. That to me is extremely important to ensure good outcomes.
That's amazing to hear, and that sounds really cool, and it makes me hopeful, optimistic. And I mean, medicine's always rapidly improving. I mean, I wouldn't put it past this to have it done in like a few, like 5-10 years. I think it's really cool the pace at which medicine works and how the death and mortality rate of so many diseases are rapidly declining. But I really want to thank you once again for answering these questions and just really speaking too. I know I've many people that look at this website are high schoolers and involved in youth advocacy, and want to learn how they can get involved, how and want to directly hear things about diseases from the experts. So it's so great to have such a direct voice and a direct knowledge. So I want to thank you really again for your time.